Everyone, and welcome to another episode of Pod Nuts Pro. I am your host, Marvin B. Ladies and gentlemen, I know I say this way too much, but tonight I'm going to say it again. I have a fantastic show for you this evening. If you have paid any attention to the tweets that I've been putting out or to the Facebook promo that I've been doing out, you will know that the guest I have tonight is somebody that is definitely out of the box in terms of the usual guests on Podnuts Pro. If you ever need help with personal finances or business finances, my guest tonight, Laura Adams, is your gal. And I can just about guarantee that you are going to love the interview that I do with her. So let's get all of the housekeeping out of the way so that we can get to Laura. Let's see, a couple of things that I want to acknowledge is a couple of emails that I got. First, I want to thank Vaughn, who sent an email and let me know that he was interested in the book by Todd Shoemaker. And Todd Shoemaker was the episode 235, Dead Man Walking. But when he clicked on the link appears to be broken and does not lead to a web page. So I did fix that for some reason. The link to the Amazon page with Todd's book was broken. If you had used the Twitter link or the link that I had on the Facebook, that link worked just fine. So if you were trying to use that link to get to the book, The Blessed Overcomer, go ahead and click on that link and it will work for you just fine. Thank you, Vaughn, for letting me know. That also reminded me of another email that I got, and I believe that I mentioned this on one of the Facebook Live shows that I did that came in from Rod, who right after that show sent me an email saying, thank you so much for putting together show 235 with Todd Shoemaker. That was a nice surprise and something I needed. So that just simply lets me know that, yes, sometimes I do shows out of the box, but as I've mentioned to people in the past, sometimes you never know what somebody will get out of any given show. So glad I was able to do that and glad that I've gotten some people to say thank you for doing that show. A little closer to today, I got an email. Let's see, this is Wednesday. I got it yesterday. Jason Miller had already listened to the last show that I just did with Matt Rainey. And he writes me saying, heard you talking about the PS View today on the podcast. Yeah, they're shutting it down. So sad. But I have switched to YouTube TV, and it's really good. Same price per month, and has everything we watched on the PS View and more. They have our local channels as well. So congrats, Jason. Glad you were able to find something. And apparently we are going to need to keep up with the streaming services, because I also know that Disney Plus started this week, and already had like 10 million viewers on the first day, or 10 million subscribers, or however they call them. And they ran into some trouble trying to watch that Mandalorian show. I don't know if I'm going to get it, because I'm already spending too much money on cable and streaming combined. Which reminds me, I actually saw an article, and I'll have to find it, but it was an article that basically said something about, before you sign up for Disney Plus, this calculator adds up the true cost of your streaming services. And I know I had a discussion with somebody a while back on all of this, where the whole idea of cutting the cord, and I know Matt Rainey tried to make it sound like, you know, he's saving $100, but he's still spending money someplace else, and he's going to end up, you know, spending more money because he's going to want to do things without commercials and stuff. But even at the basic rates, I know that Netflix is, it's like $12.99. Hulu, if you get it without ads and without the live TV, is $11.99. but you've got to add HBO. I know Amazon Prime is out there. That's included. Disney Plus, I believe, is $70 a year. So I will find a link to that article and make sure I include that just to let people look at what they're saying about the true cost of streaming services. And let's see. Oh, I am working on an announcement. I hope that I can make it by next week's show. But I did have a nice little discussion with NetAlly. I think I had the whole senior marketing department on a call, and we are moving forward with the live show that I had been planning for months, where we are going to introduce the company NetAlly, the company that took over the NetScout product line of handheld networking tools. And we hopefully will be demoing one or two products. I, again, just had the conversation with them. We've got to work out some details. And I hope that by next week, I can give you a definitive as to when that's going to be. But I wanted to give you an update because I know so many people have asked. Dubinsky keeps wanting to buy something. So hopefully here real soon, we're going to be able to answer that and direct people on where they can go for the latest and greatest of the handheld networking tools. All right. I think that that's going to do it for the housekeeping. I don't want to waste another minute getting to the interview. So without further ado, let's get to it. All right, ladies and gentlemen, now is time for the moment that you've been waiting for. And I want everybody, if you are a regular listener of the Podnuts Pro podcast, you may want to sit back, grab yourself a drink, because I'm about to give you the longest guest introduction that I have ever done. You have seen me promote her for the last few days. Laura Adams is a personal finance expert, an educator, an award-winning author of multiple books and audiobooks, a speaker. Since 2008, Laura has been the host of the very popular Money Girl podcast, a show that has over 40 million downloads. Money Girl provides short and friendly business, personal finance, and investing tips to help you live a richer life. She is a frequent source for the national media. She's been on just about every major television and radio station there is. We're talking NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, Bloomberg, NPR. Let's not forget the print publications, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, Money, Time. Whew, that's just about it. Many, many, many others. Laura did receive her MBA from the University of Florida. Boo. Some of her books include Money Girl's Smart Moves to Grow Rich, Money Girl's 10 Steps to a Debt-Free Life, Jumpstart, Spark Change in Your Life, and her latest book, Debt-Free Blueprint, How to Get Out of Debt and Build a Financial Life You Love. Not just a long name, folks, but it is already a number one new release bestseller on Amazon. She is simply known as the Money Girl. Laura, welcome to the show.
Marvin, thank you so much for having me. It's great to be with you.
Oh, I was hoping you'd say more. I need to catch my breath after that.
You didn't have to read the whole thing.
I want to make sure my listeners understand who I'm talking to. It's not every day we get a nationally known financial expert on here. So why don't we go ahead and outside of the introduction, let's talk about you, your life history, and what got you to this point? What got you wanting to be a financial expert?
Yeah, it's something that people ask me about a lot, and I don't really have a very direct path to what I'm doing. I've done a lot of different things. And so I've had a lot of experience as an entrepreneur, as a business owner. I've studied finance in school and my MBA program. I've done a lot of different things. I've been in real estate. I've just kind of got a wealth of various backgrounds that has brought me to where I am. Also a love of, you know, connecting with people, teaching, educating, all of that. So it kind of all came together in 2007 is when I started podcasting. That's when I started blogging as well. And the blogging kind of led to the podcasting. The podcasting led to more writing, and eventually led to a book which led to doing more media and PR work. And so it's kind of morphed over time into, you know, working with consumers directly to working with kind of larger audiences. So I enjoy a lot of different aspects of what I do. A lot of the time that I'm spending is writing, and a lot is definitely also working with brands that I want to work with, that I believe in, that want to get a bigger message out in the media. So, you know, it's kind of a variety of ways that I've gotten here. But at the heart of it, I love helping people make changes. I love helping people say, oh, wow, money's not that difficult. I can do this. I can figure it out. Because I think a lot of us don't have much of a foundation, you know, for money. We don't learn it in school. We may not learn it in college. We may not have good role models in our lives when it comes to money. Parents, relatives, even friends may not be so great with money. So, you know, it's no wonder why we're a little confused about it and why it can be challenging. So my goal is to make a kind of complex topic a little bit easier for people to manage and to show them that it really doesn't have to be complex. There are easy ways to reach your goals. And I'm trying to sort of make that translation and put it into everyday language for people.
All right. And I should let everybody know that you and I, we're not friends. We've not met out anywhere or anything. I started listening to your show, let's see, what is it, 2019? So 2014, I had just purchased a house with my wife, and we were just kind of looking around for stuff, and I came across one of your podcasts, and I can't even remember the number it was, but it was something about either 8 ways to lower your mortgage or pay off your mortgage faster. So that's how I came upon your podcast, and I would listen on and off here and there, mainly for a personal experience. And I got a lot of good information out of that. But lately I've been hearing some business topics, and that's how I said, ooh, I need to reach out and see if she'll speak with us. So, why don't we start with the fact that most people, if they go to your site, they're going to see you're all about personal finance, but let's go ahead and answer the question. What made you go ahead and say yes to being on my podcast to talk about business?
Yeah, I have noticed that many people are asking me more about business topics. And I think there is just a lot of momentum behind entrepreneurism right now. We probably all know somebody who is self-employed, or maybe we're all self-employed ourselves, or maybe we even have both a W-2 job and a side business that we're doing maybe on the weekends and evenings. I know I did that for many, many years. So I have a lot of personal experience in business, with both being a solopreneur, working for very small companies, and also working with very large companies. So I wanted to bring a lot of that information and knowledge to my listeners, because they're wanting to start their own businesses. They're wanting to figure out, well, what taxes do I owe? How do I figure this out? How, you know, what am I responsible for? How do I do things the right way? And there's a bit of a learning curve there. Certainly once you get over that, it's pretty easy, but it can be pretty intimidating for people when they're just starting out. And they're really not sure, you know, what they need to do. And they're also not sure how to take advantage of all of the deductions and the aspects of the tax aspects of being a business that can be very, very beneficial. So I have become a lot more of a source lately for business. And in fact, I'm also working on my next book, which will be about working for yourself. So it all goes hand in hand.
All right. Getting ready for that. And I'll look forward to that. So I kind of gather, and one of the reasons I wanted to get you on is that as I've been doing this show here and people start to ask me about, you know, how did you get started and what things did you do to get to where you are? And, you know, a lot of times people wait until after they start their business to start looking at, oh, what should I do for my business? So in terms of somebody that's, you know, looking to get started or maybe has already started, do you get a lot of questions on, you know, what can I do to fix the mistakes I've already done?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I have to pat people on the back for just getting started, because in a lot of cases, that's a hurdle. That momentum and that fear of getting started can hold a lot of people back.
Right.
So if you are somebody who has just said, hey, I'm just going to jump in and, you know, see if there's a market, if I can get some revenue here, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. However, you do need to remember that, especially in that first year, the biggest issue that I have people coming to me about is that tax bill. The first year, if they have not put away any money for taxes, and all of a sudden they realize, whoa, I'm supposed to be paying my taxes. I'm a 1099 employee now, not a W-2, or maybe I've got this money on the side as 1099 money. And all that means is you don't have an employer withholding all of those wonderful taxes from your pay, because you're getting that money directly. So you have to be the one to withhold your own taxes. You have to pay all of that stuff yourself. That can really take people by surprise that first year, that first April that comes up, and you know they've made some money that first, even if it's just a little bit of money, they made some money the prior year, and it's like, whoa, okay, I'm going to have to pay more taxes than I realize. Then they go into a hole. Then they owe money, and they've got to kind of dig themselves back out of that hole in the second year, third year of business. So that's a biggie. Just go to an accountant. That's my big piece of advice. Get some help right out of the gate. A consultation with a good certified accountant won't cost you very much, but believe me, they're going to save you a lot of money in the long run.
That is true. Personal experience. You haven't heard my podcast, but I have talked about the fact that I made that mistake. And my first year, I had a $4,000 tax bill that I did not pay at the end of the year because I didn't have that money set aside. And it took me a couple of years to find the right person to help me straighten that out. Now, I took care of it right away, so didn't, you know, hang over my head for a very long time. But it was a learning experience for sure. Now, do you have people that, you know, if they're just starting or they've maybe done something as a hobby for a while and they come to you and say, how should I set up my business in terms of being a sole proprietor, LLC, S corp? How do you help people, or, you know, where can people go to get that information as to how to set themselves up?
Yeah. If you have a good bit of revenue that you're expecting, you definitely want to make sure that you have gotten the right business entity set up. And it's going to vary depending on the type of work that you do. But I would say $10,000 is a good threshold. If you're going to make $10,000 in any given year with your business, that's a good point where you can say it's worth getting an entity set up. If it's less than that, you may be fine being a sole proprietor. However, if you've got liability with your business, so let's say, you know, you're out, maybe you're in a car driving a lot, or you're doing work with clients where there could be some liability, they could sue you for some reason, kind of depends on the work that you're doing. But if you feel like there's any liability there that you want to protect yourself against, that could mean it would be in your best interest to get that entity set up sooner rather than later. For me, with writing and a lot of the things that I've done, there hasn't been a whole lot of liability. So I actually was a sole proprietor for many years. I became an LLC really just fairly recently. And so that's, you know, in most cases, not what I recommend people do. I do recommend that you get a business entity set up. So it can depend on the type of work that you're doing. You can consult with an attorney. Again, having a very brief consultation with an attorney might not cost a whole lot, but they're going to advise you. So in most cases, being a sole proprietor is fine for a little while. But once you start earning more money and you've got more at stake, you definitely want to look at forming either an LLC or an S corp. And in some cases, maybe a C corp. But for most of us, it's going to be an LLC or an S corp.
Okay. Now, if I remember correctly, you used to live in Texas, and now you live in the great state of Florida.
That's right.
And we have a category that's called fictitious name, which if you start a business, you don't actually have to declare an entity right away. Which is what I did, because I just made up my name and I said, I'll just see how it goes, because you can do that for 5 years. Do you see something where people need to separate themselves with an actual business name when they get started?
You know, it might make sense just depending on how you want to sort of, you know, the image and the brand that you want. The fictitious name doesn't give you any legal protection. So know that it really is just a name. It's just how you're going to present yourself. So even if you are, the bottom line is that if you are a sole proprietor, your name, your personal name is also your business name. So if you don't want to be Laura Adams, then you have to have a fictitious name to change that. Now, when you register to be an LLC or an S corp or anything else, even a certain types of partnerships, you can register that business with a different name. But when you're a sole proprietor, even just a general partnership, your personal name or the name of your partner, that is your business name. So a lot of people just say, you know what, I want something different. So filing the fictitious name gives you that ability to brand yourself and have the image that you want. But it is not going to protect your liability as a sole proprietor or a just a general partnership.
Okay. So I'm kind of jumping around here because I guess that discussion now leads me into one of your recent episodes. You did a show, 8 Essential Record-Keeping Rules for the Self-Employed. And your first two tips are actually, in my mind, the same tip, but you talked about separating your business from your personal expenses and getting a separate bank account for your business.
Yeah. So for a lot of people, this is a really challenging issue because they're not doing a great job with their personal finances. So, you know, if you're not monitoring your personal finances, it's not likely that you're going to monitor your business finances very well. So actually separating them, physically separating them with a separate bank account can really help keep you honest and help keep you organized. And, you know, in the podcast, I talk about the fact that I actually have not done that, but I am like, you know, a mad person when it comes to details and looking at how I label things and allocate different expenses that come through. So I can actually run business reports, even though I've got all of my, my expenses kind of running through the same account. Same with credit cards. You might want a separate credit card that you only use for your business. That can be a really easy way to separate those expenses if you're doing a lot of credit card charges. So yes, trying to keep everything separate is going to make it really obvious. What are the business expenses? What are the personal expenses? So, you know, if actually having that separate account and that credit card works for you, definitely do it. And of course, as the volume of transactions grows, you're going to want to do that, you know, regardless. If you've got a lot of transactions coming through, it is really going to make sense to have that separate account. And if you do incorporate, you can actually get that business account in your corporate name. And that's going to also help you keep that liability separate from you as a person. And that liability separation there is important when you are a corporation. You really have to do things that make it obvious that you and your company are different entities. Having those separate bank accounts is one way to do that.
Okay. Something which I did early. I did a bank account. I did credit card. I did all that stuff. And I went probably a little overboard where I made sure I kept every single receipt and I would write notes on the receipts. I had folders for all my categories. And to this day, now that was 20 years ago, I still have a box that we literally have to take to the accountant, because I want to make sure I have all of the documentation that I need, because I don't ever want to be audited.
Yeah.
How many people do you hear about that still do the thing where they throw everything in a shoebox and take it in at the end of the year?
Yeah, a lot of people do, believe it or not. And, you know, if you can go digital, that's a great thing to do. It's certainly going to help you. You do have to be a little bit, have a little layer of organization in there, maybe taking pictures of receipts, sending them to something like Evernote is a good way to organize digital receipts. There are a lot of different ways you can do it and apps that you can use. But yes, I mean, better to be too organized than not organized enough, Marvin. So I like your technique.
All right. Now, one of the things that I think now in my industry, we are probably one of the ones that are known worse for starting as a hobby, working out of the house, and trying to make it work so that we will, you know, get the deductions for the home office and stuff like that. What kind of tips do you have in that regard for, you know, making sure you do things right.
Yeah. You know, unfortunately, it's a lot easier to claim the home office deduction for your business than it used to be. There's something called the simplified method, which basically just allows you to give a dollar amount per square footage of space. So one tip is just figure out what that space is. It can include a bathroom. It can, you know, it doesn't have to be some tiny little closet. You can make it, you know, a larger area that you're actually using. So define that space, you know, record that down, let your accountant, if you use an accountant, know what that is and if that changes from year to year. But it's actually pretty simple if you use that simplified method for calculating it. Now, if you have a larger space that you're using, that simplified method may not work for you because you may get a bigger deduction from actually calculating the square footage and going through kind of some of the, you know, the calculations to use a larger space with that deduction instead of using the simplified method. So I would recommend getting an accountant to help you with this. If it's pretty simple for you, you may be able to do it yourself, like in year two or three, but getting set up that first year can really, you know, be kind of an important thing to do. You know, of course, if you're like me and you move a lot, you may have to change your deduction from year to year. But if you're in the same house, you're in the same office year after year, once you've got that set up, it's going to be pretty easy to use in the following years.
Okay. All right. So let me kind of shift gears here because I want to ask you just more of a personal question for me. So you had mentioned that you started podcasting in 2007, just basically because you fell in love with it. How did that happen?
I was an audiophile. I was just always listening to audio. I'm one of those people that was in the car with the CD or the cassette back in the day, just listening all the time. I'm just have always loved audio. So when podcast arrived in my world, I was pretty blown away. And I was listening to, gosh, like 50, 60 different podcasts at one point. And it was, I think, 2005 that I had a little tiny iPod Shuffle. Do you remember those?
I remember those. Yeah.
Yeah. Little tiny thing. And I was using that for podcasts and I was just listening to so many shows. And the idea popped in my head that maybe I should be creating a show. Maybe I should be giving back to the podcasting community because I had been absorbing and listening to so much for like, you know, 6-8 months and was just enthralled with it. So it was kind of an experiment to see, could I figure it out? Could I create an RSS feed? Could I make it work? And I did. And so it just became something that I was fascinated with. And it was also a way to help me learn and remember a lot of the curriculum that I had learned in my MBA. And it was a way to kind of review a lot of that. So initially I was doing a lot of business related finance, and then it kind of morphed into more personal finance. And that's really where I got more, I guess, feedback from listeners. And that feedback sort of told me, hey, there's a need for this. And so I went in that personal finance direction.
All right. Now, I imagine that you probably got inundated with questions because this is one of those topics where, you know, people have a personal stake in their money. And if things aren't going well, they're going to reach out for help. So is that something that you anticipated when you started doing the podcast that you would have to really be answering questions that much?
It isn't. And it was really surprising and really fun when I did get a lot of questions. And I'll never forget the very first email that I ever got from a listener was from a listener who was asking about a career choice that he was trying to make. And at the very end of the email, he said, oh, and by the way, I'm blind. And I listen to your show while I'm commuting to my job where I create boxes for my job. And it really touched me. And it you know, I could picture this fellow, you know, riding the bus, going to his job, listening to a show on career and personal finance. And it was just a really inspiring email. And that was something that really kind of kept me going. I would think about that particular listener and think about how can I help him? And yes, I got and still get lots and lots of email questions. I can't answer them all, but what I try to do is batch things together when I see sort of a trend, a lot of people asking about buying a home or refinancing or business related questions. I'll try to kind of batch them together and do a show that I think will appeal to the most people.
All right. Now, because of that and all these other things that you have done, you have kind of like a media empire. Folks, I'm going to obviously put the link to her website in the show note, lauradadams.com. And you have got just about everything there, from your books to your podcast links, investing, retirement, taxes. You also have some stuff on Facebook. You have a private group called Dominating Your Dollars.
Mm-hmm.
You're just freaking everywhere.
It's fun. Yeah, it really is fun. And I'm trying to be wherever I think people will be, you know, and where can I meet people when they have a need or have a question. So, you know, it's interesting. The podcast has been a great way to introduce people to me and to advice. But it's funny, I get a lot of people also who will say, I found you another way. You know, I read a book and that led me to the podcast, or I saw you on a media interview and that led me to this or that. So it's fun trying to meet people where they are.
So I'm going to throw a big, huge left turn at you. I heard in one of your interviews, and I can't remember which one, I can't remember where, but you originally were going to be an environmental lawyer.
That's right. So I went to undergrad at the University of the South. I have a Bachelor of Science in Natural Resources. I studied trees and rocks, Marvin. And I'm not kidding you. So I have a lot of biology and a science background. And so my thought was, after you go to a liberal arts school, you know, for a lot of people, it's like, okay, what do you do now? For a lot of people, it's, you know, go to get a law degree, go to, you know, get a medical degree, do something professional, go to graduate school. And so at the time, environmental law was a really hot career. And I thought, well, that sounds kind of cool. But the longer I was out of school and started working, the less being an attorney appealed to me. And it just wasn't something I wanted to pursue. So I ended up getting into more finance jobs and sort of entry level positions, and realized that that was really my forte and my interest. I knew I didn't want to be an accountant per se, but it kind of laid a really good foundation for business and understanding, what are sort of all of the roles going on behind the scenes in a business. I think ultimately business is what has always kind of fascinated me. And so being a solopreneur myself, and, you know, having also been in different size companies, I'm just really, really interested. I've always been interested in business. And then, you know, as I mentioned, when I was in my graduate program, there were a lot of very successful people that were there with me. But they, even though they had all this success at work and this career success, many of them were really failing with their personal finances. So that's how I kind of got into the personal side of it. I realized that you can be very smart. You can even be very successful in your career. That doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to do a great job managing your money
right,
with personal finances. So my goal was to try to bridge that gap.
All right. I always like to hear the backstory about people, because if I had to list all the jobs I had before I became a tech and business owner, people would be like, how in the world did you get there? So I like to hear those stories. So now you've got, well, you're going to have a new book out, but the book that has just been out, The Debt-Free Blueprint. Before we get to that, I want to ask a question, because if people go to the website and they go to look up the book, you already have a section for freebies. And one of those freebies is, they can download 4 free chapters of the book. So I want to ask, that's a lot of freebie stuff that you're giving away. Why?
I know. I really enjoy giving away free content, because I do think that you know, number one, people need it. They're looking for answers. And I think that if you give folks a taste of what you're offering, they're more likely to come back. And I have a lot of people that will download the chapters and probably won't buy the book, but a lot of people will buy the book, or it'll introduce them to the podcast. And so I've always loved giving away free stuff. I mean, that's why I do the podcast. I don't really, you know, the podcast is itself is a little bit of a moneymaker for me, but it's mostly a labor of love and a way to connect with people and build community.
All right. So now the book, Debt-Free Blueprint, How to Get Out of Debt and Build a Financial Life You Love. Already a number one new release bestseller on Amazon. You already had a book out. I believe it was just an audio only, The 10 Steps to a Debt-Free Life. So what's different in this new book that wasn't in the first?
Yeah, it's a great question. So much has changed. There are so many different government programs that are available now that weren't then, or vice versa. There are a lot of issues now, like student loan debt, you know, that are on folks' minds that weren't necessarily such a hot topic when I wrote that book. Gosh, I think that was 2009 or 2010. So there's been a lot that has changed. And so I wanted to really update it, make it modern, give people some more up-to-date tools, if you will, and strategies for getting out of debt. And the trick with it really is priority. So, you know, even if you don't have a lot of extra money to pay down toward your debt, there are strategies and ways to attack it in the right order. And I find that if you do things in the right order, that can make all the difference, kind of lining up your dominoes and making sure that you're tackling the right things first can make it a whole lot easier on yourself and give you a lot more power and efficiency when it comes to paying down debt. So that's a big part of the book. I have a lot more of a focus on prioritizing what to tackle first.
Okay. Now, you've been doing this for well over a decade, and I know that I've been researching personal finance and tips and strategies and all that stuff. And I know basically most of us have done that. Do you have any idea why it's so hard for us to stay out of debt?
Yeah, I think it's so easy to get into debt because we've got access to credit. So for a lot of us, it's credit cards. It's so easy to get a credit card. It's so easy to spend on credit cards. That can get out of control real fast. Yeah. And certainly we know, as I mentioned, student loan debt, you know, it's $1.6 trillion that are in outstanding student loans right now across the U.S. So, I mean, that's just an astounding number. So when folks are starting their careers, starting their lives with so much debt, it makes it tough because then they're going to lean on those credit cards in order to be able to make the student loan payment. And it just can snowball and really get out of control. And I think people want to, you know, they want to buy homes. They want to be able to have all of these things that perhaps their parents have had. And those, you know, those temptations are there to overspend on whether it's homes, clothes, vacation, the consumer driven debt. Unfortunately, it's something that I think as Americans, it's just a little bit in our DNA, and we tend to have very easy access to credit compared to other countries. So there you go. It's kind of a perfect storm for letting debt get out of control.
That is true. I have heard the generation before me talk about the fact that we don't deal with cash anymore. And it used to be if you had cash in your hand and you had to watch it leave, you paid a lot more attention to where it was going, as opposed to simply swiping a card. Yeah, I'll deal with it later.
Yeah, and I do agree with that. As much as I love digital finance and I love having everything digital and not having to carry cash, there's definitely a downside to it. So yeah, if you are really trying to pare back and go for a new budget, that envelope method of just putting cash in envelopes that are labeled for different things, getting back to the basics really can work. It may not be something that you have to do your whole life, but it can be something that kind of resets your budget and can put you on a better path, let's say. And sometimes something stark like that is really what it takes to make yourself realize that, wow, you know, my lifestyle is inflated. I'm overspending. I'm living outside of my means. And that can definitely be one tool. There are other ways as well. But yeah, if you want to get back to the cash method, it doesn't help you when you're trying to buy anything online or, you know, make an airline reservation. Right. But for some things, it can help you. You know, let's say for holiday shopping, that's a great tip that I give people. Set a budget ahead of time, get some cash, and that wad of cash is all that you're going to spend on your holiday budget and your gifts and whatnot. So that can be one way to help you limit spending when you know that things could get out of control and you need to put some barriers around it. Have that envelope of cash with you.
All right. So one of the things in this book you talk about is bridging the gap between reality and where you want to be. Without giving away too much from the book, how can you describe that here?
Yeah, so really figuring out where you are right now, that's a challenge for a lot of people because they are not in tune with their finances. They're not monitoring expenses. They're not looking at transactions very closely. So that's the first step, is to figure out where your budget, where your life is right now. And that can be tough for people because it can be a little scary. A lot of people just kind of want to put their head in the sand and don't really want to know how bad things are. They don't even know what levels of debt they have or where their debt is. You know, you'd be surprised how far out of control it can get for many people. So figuring that out, really listing things out is key. And I mean, like the old fashioned way, you can write it down on a piece of paper. Maybe it's an Excel spreadsheet. There are various ways that you can do this, but literally listing out everything that you have. It's called a personal financial statement. So this is something that can really help you get a bird's eye view on your finances. So what are your assets? What are the things you own? What are those values? And then below that, what are all of your liabilities? Everything that you owe, from a mortgage to student loan debt, credit cards, all of that, listing it out. And being, when it's there in black and white on paper, on a spreadsheet, you can't ignore it. And then you can begin to tackle things in the right order.
All right. Now, if we were to kind of translate that back to the business side for my business owners that are listening, my solopreneurs and stuff like that, can you apply the same principles that you do in personal finance to the business finance?
In some ways, you can, definitely. I mean, you really should be looking at a balance sheet. You should be looking at cash flow statements. All of those things definitely do apply. So, you know, I don't know if your listeners would have necessarily any business debt or liability, but you can.
Oh, yes, they do.
Yes. Okay. Well, having a list of, yes, those assets and liabilities, I mean, that's called a balance sheet. So that is definitely something that you should be able to create. If you've got any kind of a software program, Quicken, you know, QuickBooks, anything like that, that you're using, making sure that you've got all of your assets and liabilities there, you can easily print out a balance sheet and looking at what you have versus what you owe. And the same principles do apply in terms of tackling them in the right order. Typically, you want to look at highest rate debt first, looking at that down to low rate debt. So ranking high rate debt is the most dangerous, the most having the biggest priority and tackling that first. It's costing you the most in interest. So in general, that's where I encourage folks to start. For many people, it's credit cards, right? Because yep, the interest rates there are the highest. And that's probably the same for business.
Business loans, capital loans, all of that good stuff. All right. Well, I don't want to take up a ton of time talking about stuff that only I want to hear about. So is there anything else maybe in the book or that I haven't asked you that you want to make sure that my listeners take to heed?
You know, I would just say in terms of business, it really is important to get professional help. If you're starting a business and you feel a little bit, you know, in the clouds about, oh my gosh, I'm not really sure what's going to happen with taxes this year. Or I'm not sure if I'm doing things the right way. That can really stress you out. You know, it can really weigh on you. So if you get a little bit of clarification from either an attorney or an accountant to even just say, hey, you're doing things the right way, you're okay, or tweak this a little bit to help keep yourself more organized, you'd be surprised how good that can make you feel and reduce the stress level that you may have with your business. Even with the debt, you may have an accountant who could help you prioritize some of that debt. and lead you down a path that would help you get rid of it as quickly as possible. So getting help, that's always just, you know, my number one piece of advice, because I find that people resist it. They either think, oh, it's going to be too expensive, or, you know, I want to be able to do it myself and, you know, be independent. In the long run, we all need help. We all need advice. I seek help. I seek advice. And I don't know any professional that doesn't get it regularly, or at least, you know, every once in a while when an issue comes up. So getting those tips and that advice can really make your business run a lot more smoothly. And I think take the pressure off so that you can do what you're meant to do in your business, which is probably not the accounting and the finance stuff. You want to be working on the IT aspect and more of the technical pieces, the things that you have talents and skills and abilities. And if you're spinning your wheels trying to do accounting all day long, you're never going to get your business tasks done. So leave that, if you can, to the folks that love doing it and that want to do it and that are probably going to be able to do it in a fraction of the time that it could take you to do it.
All right. There you have it, folks. Laura Adams, the Money Girl. And I will have the link to her website, lauradadams.com. If you have set a resolution to get out of debt, get your business straight, now is the time to do it. And Laura Adams is probably somebody you should go and get that information from. Laura, thank you very much for being on the podcast and giving us some great, great information.
Marvin, it's been my pleasure. Thank you. And it's been fun to connect with you and see you. See your smiling face here on the video, even though the listeners can't see us. Yeah. It's been nice to connect with you.
All right. Thank you very much. And we will be sure to stay in touch.
Thanks so much.
That's going to do it, ladies and gentlemen, for this episode of Podnuts Pro. I want to once again thank Laura Adams for agreeing to be on the show. Be sure to check the show note for the links to her webpage, her podcast, her new book. And folks, let me just say this about her podcast. Not only is it a very, very popular podcast, it has been nominated many times. And when I say many, four, five, six, it is a nominee for the best business podcast many times over. Simply one of the most professional and informative podcasts out there. So be sure to take a listen to that, folks. The Money Girl Podcast, her book, Debt-Free Blueprint, How to Get Out of Debt and Build a Financial Life You Love. I will have a link to that as well. Please use the Amazon link and support the show, Podnuts Pro. And also, again, if you have any comments, questions, any feedback you'd like to give on this show or any show, feel free to email me, marvin@podnuts.com. I will read and respond to all email. Yes, I will. All right, folks, I hope you enjoyed the show. That's going to do it for me tonight. And we'll be looking forward to giving you another show here in the next week or so. But until then, holla.